Welcome to Talk at 10. It's your weekday interview program on KRTS, Marfa Public Radio. I'm Tom Michael, your host for this episode. You've been hearing us talk for the last few weeks about The Reading from Ballroom Marfa. It's the second annual presentation, a professionally staged screenplay performance at the Crowley Theater. It's showcasing one of the winners of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, their annual Nickel Fellowship. And on Saturday, April 21st, there will be two performances at the Crowley Theater here in Marfa. That's at 2 p.m. matinee and an 8 o'clock show. Both of them will have a Q&A afterwards hosted by Robert Shapiro, Bob Shapiro, former head of Warner Brothers. Well, today in the studio, we're pleased to be joined by producer Nancy Sanders from Ballroom Marfa and also the director, John Davies from Dallas. Welcome both.
Thank you.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
First, let's catch up our audience from last year. Last year was the inaugural presentation of The Reading. It featured The Jumpers of Maine, and it was a screenplay that was staged. And I just wanted to know, Nancy, what happened to that screenplay, and have you stayed in touch with Andrew?
Oh, good question. Andrew is doing well. He, went to New York right after he got his master's degree down in Austin, and he went was in New York for a while working on the script. He has a producer lined up. I believe it was Donald DeLine. And he's now, I think, going out to Los Angeles to, you know, enhance it some more. And also, I believe he started another script, as far as I recall. So he's doing great things and a great future ahead of him.
This is Andrew Lanham with the script, The Jumpers of Maine. John, did you direct it last year?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you tend to follow the story as these screenplays move on? And
No, I don't. I hear about it through Nancy and Carolyn, but Andrew was supposed to come to Dallas at one point during the last year, and he never made it, so... And whether or not these screenplays, my job doesn't have to do with what's going to happen to these screenplays, but with trying to put them on stage here in Marfa, and I have to confess, I probably lose a little interest in the matter, because it's an intense experience mm-hmm. once it's done.
We're joined again by producer Nancy Sanders, also her producing partner, Carolyn Pfeiffer, also of Marfa, and John S. Davies. He is directing this year's performance, which is Cutter. Well, Nancy, let's ask about the selection process and mention the judges.
Yes, we were very gratified to have Bob Shapiro once again as head of the Nickel Committee, taking a look at the scripts and being part of the Filmmaker Selection Committee, is what we call them, to select the script for The Reading. And along with the fabulous actress Jean Triplehorn joined in, and also the very famous screenwriter of Chinatown, Robert Towne. So it was quite a prestigious group taking a look at the scripts and figuring out which one was the best to put on stage, and the decision was Cutter, and we could not be more thrilled. It is a very challenging script, but we're ready for it.
Let me ask, really, 6,700 scripts came in for this contest.
Right.
For this committee.
Right. The Nickel Fellowship is the most prestigious screenwriting competition in the country and probably beyond. I'm pretty sure they have international submissions. And to any aspiring screenwriter, winning the Nickel is critical to success, I would say. It puts you over... the edge, it puts you into the new world of Hollywood. It gives you, when you go for your Nickel Week as a finalist and then finally as a fellowship recipient, you're pretty much on track to end up with an agent and maybe even an entertainment lawyer and a manager. Right now, Dion Cook, the writer of Cutter, has all three.
Dion Cook was this year's winner of the Nickel Fellowship screenplay. It will be staged, performed this weekend, Saturday, in Marfa, Texas. It is a Ballroom Marfa event. That's a matinee at 2 and also at 8. Well, this story deals with a very true event that happened not even a generation ago, the 1994 Rwanda genocide. As you said, Nancy, a very challenging script. Perhaps you and John can give us an overview of Qatar.
Well, the script concerns a man, Patrice Kasana, who survived the genocide and came to America and became a doctor. And I can't tell you too much more about it because it kind of gives away what's going on in the script. But ultimately what happens is things that he did and that were done to him during the genocide come back to visit him 20 years later and cause massive changes in his life. And it's a kind of a haunting and there are very frightening moments in the screenplay, but it's more of a sort of a haunting look at how the past affects this man, not in a good way.
We talk about post-traumatic stress disorder with our veterans. I had the opportunity once to meet a friend of my sister-in-law's who also had his family killed in Rwanda in the mid-90s and was making a new life in North Carolina. It is pretty amazing what these folks have gone through and many of them who have come to America. What drew you to the script, Nancy?
Well, the story is so compelling, and the revelation that, these things are going on in the world at this time and in 1994, it's so unfathomable. And to read the details of it, and, of course, this is Dion's fictional account, but it was an overwhelming story, and it was one that I really didn't know that I didn't know the details of. And I think not too many people, we hear, it's one of those things, you hear about it on TV, you sort of see some bad pictures. But this particular story about this lead character, Patrice, is just, I think everybody will be very shaken up a little bit at the end of this screenplay presentation.
Is it set in America, in Miami?
It's halfway set there, and not to be a spoiler on the story, but it's halfway set there, and then there's parts that are flashback.
They're set in Rwanda, yeah.
Yes.
In Rwanda. John, can you tell us some of the names of the actors and where they hail from?
We're bringing a large contingent of people from Dallas, and our lead actor is Gerald Dewey, playing Patrice. We have some other, Babs Ipai playing one of the Rwandans, and Patrick Grover.
We have Jenna Thomas and Liz Melanson, and we also have Jeff Finter, all from Dallas with wonderful resumes, professional actors, and
We have a group of sort of an ensemble, because this is a large cast piece, and there are a lot of small roles, so we recruited another 8 actors, most of whom are students, to come and fill in. And I mean, some of these scenes we can't do them on stage as they are written, but some of them should involve hundreds of people, which is a huge contrast to last year, mm-hmm. which was very small, self-contained, sort of domestic drama. This thing spans continents and far more characters in this script than there were in last year's.
When people hear the word stage reading, they should know it's not just folks sitting in tall chairs with a script in their hand. This is a very professional performance. And in fact, last year, Nancy, you utilized lighting designer Rob Crawley in a very innovative way with that scrim, with that screen and the shadows. Are there any other interesting challenges or twists to this year's production?
I would say yes. More visual elements coming into play that were not in last year's performance. And we have some sort of magical visual effects, I would call them, from an expert in... Do I want to give it away?
Yeah. I mean, we can tell them that, Fred Kerchak, who is an internationally known performance artist and writes and performs his own stuff and has been doing for more than 30 years... is coming in to direct the shadow play in this year's production because it's going to be way more extensive. If you saw last year's, we did a couple of things behind a scrim. But this year we're doing genocide behind a scrim, which is in scope and scale rather different from So that's why we brought Fred in to do the stuff, you know, that happens behind the scrim in the shadow light.
I'm looking at the names of your actors. One of them appears to be perhaps even an African name.
Yeah, oh yeah. We and Babs Epaye is African. Also, two of the other people, Austin Odima and Divine Doe, are coming in, who are students of mine at KD College in Dallas, are both originally from Africa.
Are they from the area affected?
No. No, one of them's Kenyan and one of them's from Cameroon.
Did they have any personal comments on that horrible time 18 years ago?
I don't know that either of them had any kind of personal contact with it, but we read the script in my script analysis class, which a couple of these kids are in, and they all had extreme reactions to the stuff that's in the script.
Again, a reminder that show is at 2 p.m. and at 8 p.m. on Saturday, and Bob Shapiro will be doing a Q&A afterwards. We especially appreciate these Q&As, especially with something, obviously this is a fictional account, mm-hmm. but with something that has such real-world implications.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're very gratified that he's agreed to do it again. I do think that Q&A sort of gives you even a wider context for the performance because at least in the second one, at 8 o'clock, the lead actor will also be participating along with John and answering questions. So that way, the impact on him and performing this lead role, I think we'll get a real sense of that afterwards. So that should be very interesting.
Again, we're talking about the reading. The selection is Cutter, and the author, Deanne Cook. Will the author be?
Yes, he will be on stage too, obviously.
He'll be there for the Q&A.
Yes.
And he may or may not attend. He's here in town now. He may or may not attend all the rehearsals, but he'll certainly be there for the performances.
And yes. What was his experience? How did he learn? Why did he pick this subject matter?
I happen to know that he was watching a documentary, I believe, and on television.
Whose
name he can't remember. And he saw a fleeting shot of a man, I think, walking down a road, something to that effect, in Rwanda. This documentary was obviously on the atrocities there. And that one shot just made him start to think. And as a screenwriter, it just snowballed into a script. And it's lovely that that's how it happened. It was just one glimpse of a man, but that's sometimes how it does happen.
At the time of this genocide, I was involved in educational publication, the Encyclopedia Britannica. We were actually working on new maps for Rwanda based on this. And I recall during the news reports in the mid-90s how radio propaganda had an enormous effect. Is that part of the script at all?
It is. It's not a significant part of the script. There's a film called Something Sometimes in April, in which radio is, which is also about the Rwandan genocide, in which radio and the radio station, in fact, one of the lead characters is one of the DJs who goes on the air and makes these inciting comments. There is a moment in this script where a DJ is quoted inciting, mm-hmm. Genocide. But it's not a huge... The difference between this script and other pieces like Hotel Rwanda and Sometimes in April is that this one takes place in a village rather than in the capital city, Kigali. So this script deals with the genocide on a much more personal level, whereas in, say, Hotel Rwanda, you saw a lot of bombing and you saw dead bodies, but you never saw anybody get killed. In this script, yes.
Cutter is the script, and this is, again, a Ballroom Marfa production. Let me ask you, Nancy, as producer and as a Ballroom Marfa board member, there seems to be a continuing commitment to this from Executive Director Fairfax Dorn and Ballroom Marfa. And it's interesting because here we are in a town with strengths in visual arts and now growing strengths in film as well. And also Lennon Foundation and strengths in writing. And here you're kind of melding them all.
Yes, we're excited, and I'm especially excited because I'm also a screenwriter of sorts and as a hobby. And it's exciting because the screenwriter is a little underappreciated in general, the amateur screenwriter. So many fabulous scripts are sitting on shelves around the country and in Hollywood and not getting the focus that they need. But this was the perfect opportunity to look at the screenwriter, the amateur screenwriter, as an emerging artist, another kind of emerging artist for Ballroom Marfa, and to shine the spotlight on that artist a little bit more, and why not start at the top with a Nickel Fellowship winning script. So we couldn't have picked a better competition to focus on, the Nickel Fellowship, and we're so grateful to the Academy, too, for allowing us to do this.
So there's a sense that this will continue, that the Academy is also interested in seeing this continue.
Well, I think that we will have one of them here. The head of the Nickel Fellowship will be here, Greg Beal, the head of the competition. And then Bob Shapiro, obviously, of the Nickel Committee, is here lending support and counsel and everything else in every way. And so we do feel, that we have their support on it, and we really hope that we can continue it, because I think it's a wonderful program.
John, let me ask you, in addition, you're a veteran actor with The Alamo, Magnolia, RoboCop, JFK. You've starred in television series include Walker, Texas Ranger. So you've worked in both film and television, and of course, theater, known for a lot of Shakespeare as well. You also are an educator. You teach directing and acting and Shakespeare in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you look at it as pure theater, or is there a part of the visual element of film that needs to be included?
It's an interesting question. Yes, it's a film script, so it's meant to be told in images, not in dialogue. But in order to put it on stage, you kind of have to focus on the dialogue scenes, because you can most effectively stage those dialogue scenes because they're the most like theater. But particularly with this script, the challenge has been to try to find a way to do as much with the images as with the dialogue. And so we've added a lot of technical elements this year, so that much more than last year, I hope, my dream is that the result of this whole thing will be a kind of a hybrid. There will be some elements, slide projections, and even some video that could be in the movie. But obviously it's happening live on stage, and they're all carrying their scripts. So there's a real blend this year, particularly of theatrical and sort of filmic elements in this thing.
Obviously we talked about film, television, and theater.
Yeah.
And there must be different approaches the way you direct your actors. And just the simplistic from an outsider's point of view, television and especially film has close-ups.
Right.
Theater doesn't.
Right. Yeah. And so the I don't have as many opportunities as I would in film, frankly, to direct them per se, because the impression has to be made off of all the elements combined. Whereas, yes, in a film or a television show, I could take close-ups. There are, in fact, a few of these scenes that I have compressed a little bit because I don't have a close-up. So there are certain things that I can't show this audience that I would be able to if I was actually making the movie. So I've compressed some things down to try to retain the same effect, but without all the action that he necessarily specifies in his screen directions. So I've had to modify in some ways.
You're also confined by the set.
I'm confined by the size of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the theater is a wonderful thing in that the audience's imagination can make up for an awful lot of stuff that you don't have, physical stuff, I mean.
Nancy, I've not known too many people who've personally have gone into screenwriting. One, though, was a famed comic book writer. And got into superhero movies. And there's something about the storyboarding in, let's say, a comic strip that lends itself to film. When you personally work on a screenplay, how do you generally work? As a writer myself, I imagine you just write a lot and then you cut it out and add stage direction.
Well, I can only speak for myself on this. So everybody's got their own techniques. I do think in pictures when I sit down to write a script, but honestly, it just starts to unfold. I've outlined one script, and it didn't turn out that well. I mean, I went from A to Z with the scenes, just outlining the main plot, the little snippets of action that would be taking place. But it did not turn out that well, so I'm back to just sitting down at the typewriter. It's simple as that. So, and the visuals are in my head all the time, and I also pick music. I set the tone at the beginning, and I listen to probably one CD over and over and over again so that I stay with the tone. I'll pick Beethoven or something or whatever, but I don't know how many people do that, but I know that's the trick that I use.
To me, it would be a very enjoyable aspect to that. Tell us about the music for Cutter.
Guy I know in Dallas is a composer and musician and so forth, and he has recorded a bunch of stuff based on suggestions that I had and his own reaction to the script. And I have about 20 minutes or so of various bits and pieces of music. None of it's – they're not complete pieces of music. They're different musical themes. And one of the things I'm going to do is this afternoon I'm going to sit in the theater and look at the script and play this music and try to figure out how and which pieces of it will fit where.
Now I'm going to ask you about production time,
yeah,
because obviously you're in Dallas, the actors are elsewhere, and the thing about this stage reading is there's not a whole lot of production time. So there must be some great efficiencies, and you all must be just racing out of your heads.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're bringing the actors in today, and we start with rehearsals at 8:30 in the morning, and it will be extremely intense, and it will be nonstop, and then there will be a dress rehearsal Friday evening and going into the performances. And it is very challenging, to say the least. I think last year people, you know, also I would like to say we are so grateful for the participation of local actors here, Harry Hudson and a cast of, you know, quite a few here from Marfa, which we're so grateful to have them participating. And so I think everybody was a little amazed last year to see this thing come together so fast. And we hope the same thing happens this year.
I should say to our listeners that we're recording this a few days ago. When you said the actors arrive tomorrow, they're arriving Wednesday. And still, what a short timeline for this production.
We have one extra day this year, thank goodness, than we had last year. But I personally have generated about 175 pages of notes and diagrams for myself in preparation, whereas last year I basically did it off the top of my head. And this year I have gone through the script from every possible angle. And so has Fred Kerchak, who's doing the shadow play. And we've been talking back and forth. I mean, the amount of preparation on this thing in order to pull it off in 3 days is kind of astonishing. And Nancy, I mean, we've shot photographs in Dallas. We've shot some video in Dallas that's going into the reading. Mm-hmm. And Nancy's been buying fake blood. And
we had the auditions in Dallas. Yeah. We had to cast a very wide net for this particular script. We were looking for the accents and trying to get it as correct as we could. Mm-hmm. And so
the politics of that time are a little fuzzy to me. It was the Hutu and the Tutsi, right?
Yes.
The main character in the Cutter represents which of those ethnic groups?
He is a Hutu.
Hutu.
Yes. Yes.
And the majority group?
Well, the majority group were the majority group were the Hutus. Mm-hmm. The country had been ruled for years by the Tutsis, mm-hmm. and then a compromise was reached. But then the president was killed I don't know that they know this for sure, but many people think it was an RPG that was fired at the helicopter. So when that happened, then the Hutus had always been in this inferior position. They took their revenge, and thus the genocide. Mm-hmm. They started to kill all the Tutsis.
Seems like a very powerful script, and sounds like an exciting performance as well. This is Saturday, the 21st, at 2 o'clock and at 8 o'clock. How do folks get tickets or reservations, I should say?
They need to call into Ballroom Marfa or get on www.ballroommarfa.org and just go to film and the reading and click on to RSVP for a reserved seat.
Telephone number for Ballroom Marfa locally is 729-3600. That's ballroommarfa.org for the reading.
I will say that the speed with which we did this last year and the speed with which we're going to do this year are entirely owing to, and I mean this seriously, the skills and talents of Rob Crowley and Gory Smelly. And this year, Rosa McElhenney, who's the intern at Ballroom, who's doing all the images. Literally, I have never in my life seen a lighting technician and a sound technician work that fast as I did last year, and without complaining, and without, you know, any whining or, gosh, we don't want to do this. I mean, in fact, 2 hours before the first performance last year, Rob Crowley was saying, "Look, I have this idea," and I'm saying, "Rob, we're gonna, it's, we don't have to, it's fine." "No, no, no, I want to do this." I said, "Rob, if you want to do this, please do." And he did, which is astonishing to me.
Two very talented people, and yes, we'll be calling on them a few days afterwards for the Feist concert, which is no small
yes,
potatoes.
Right, right.
And no, congratulations and our thanks, as always, to the Crowley Theater and to Ballroom Marfa for putting on these fantastic cultural events. Again, it's the Nikos Fellowship winner, Cutter Dion Cook, Saturday, Ballroom Marfa show at the Crowley Theater, 2 o'clock and 8 p.m. Thanks again.
Thanks. Thank My you. Pleasure.
This is Tom Michael with Talk at 10 here on Marfa Public Radio.